Wowzer. Today's episode is really good. Tons of good information. We have Benny Hsu from the Get Busy Living podcast, and we talk all about print on demand and his experiences. Well, first, he started out selling apps, which is a crazy story, and he made $30,000 in his first 30 days. Then he went to sell t-shirts, and then he made $100,000 in 5 months, and now he's absolutely crushing it, and he's giving Gwen and I all the tips.
You know, his story reminds me a lot of where I'm at right now. He started off living off his savings and selling some of his valuables in when his money ran low, and then he pivoted and became successful. And I think that's what I got out of this episode the most, is that, you know, you just got to buckle down and dig deep and do it, and the money will follow.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Welcome to another episode of Fire Drill Podcast. Today's guest is Benny. Welcome to the show, Benny.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
And we have my co-host here as well, Jay. What's up, Jay?
Hey.
So, Benny, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I live in Jacksonville, Florida. And if you ask me what I do for a living, I would say I'm on e-commerce. I sell things for a living online. And I've been full-time making money online since 2013.
So how did you get started in this whole e-commerce thing? Like, walk us through how you discovered that you could make money online.
Wow. It's been a while. Like, you know, I'm certainly not someone who you would consider like an overnight success. It's been a long process, long journey. I would say the first sign, the first, you know, inkling that I wanted to do something online was when I read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
You know, classic. Like,
right, classic. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have read that book, and many have found it to be instrumental in wanting to have a side hustle or work online. So that really opened my mind to, you know, not just working, you know, 9 to 5 for the rest of my life, but just having a business where I could have freedom in my life to, you know, enjoy things like traveling and other things. So that was around 2007, I believe. And that's when I really started to think, okay, well, I want to do something online, but I don't quite know what it was at the time. You know, at the time I was working at a restaurant, a family restaurant business, and I had been working there for about 7 years at that point. And I really did not like it. You know, that's to put it nicely. You know, I just really, the job was just really draining on me. I was mentally tired. I was physically tired. I hated my job with a passion. And so, you know, I was trying to find out what I wanted to do, trying to discover another career. And then, like I said, I read the book and I thought, okay, once I'm finding a 9 to 5, let me try and see if I can make money online.
Was that your family's restaurant or is that somebody else's family restaurant?
No, it's my family's restaurant, my family.
Okay, because usually I find that people don't like working in family-owned businesses because of like the internal family politics, because they're not part of the family and they're excluded. But you're part of the family and you didn't like working there either.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, we didn't have any problems with, you know, like just family relationships. It was just, you know, the duties, you know, what I was dealing with day in and day out. I just didn't like working in the restaurant. I liked it like the first 5 years. I enjoyed the work. I enjoyed going to work actually. But then it just wasn't for me. I just didn't like doing it. I didn't like dealing with customers. I didn't like, you know, working in the food industry. What was more frustrating was I didn't know what else to do. So that was equally as frustrating for me.
I think a lot of people can relate to feeling not happy in their current situation, but it can seem a little bit impossible to switch the course of your life. So what was that catalyst for you?
It's really hard. Yeah. Cause you know, like I said, it was a sort of like a yearly thing for me. It was like, okay, well this year I hope I can figure out what I want to do. You know, I was looking online for different jobs locally. I just found nothing that interests me, no careers that interest me. So it wasn't until I sort of hit my low point, you know, I call it my own rock bottom. And that was in October of 2010, just after many years of wanting and hoping and wishing that I could do something different where I could make money and be happy. I had another night at work. It was a weekend, so it was super busy. I was driving home. I was extremely tired, mentally and physically. I remember just driving home. It was like a 15-minute ride home, and just with the music off and just sort of like staring at the road, just wondering, like, really, like, how in the world did my life get to this point? because, you know, growing up in a Chinese family, you know, I got good grades because school was really important. I was expected to go to college and get a job after college and, you know, make money and buy a house and, you know, just checking off all the different boxes, right? That's like the American dream. So I had done that, but I was so unhappy. So I was wondering, like, where did I go wrong? Like, what did I do wrong? I drove home. I remember I came upstairs in my house and I opened my computer and I typed a letter to myself that night. And it was just sort of like me talking to me, you know, just being real, being honest. You know, I wasn't like cursing myself or anything like that. I was just very calm and collected. I was just telling myself, hey, stop wasting your life. You know, life is too short to be unhappy doing what you hate. So you need to like take action every single day until you build the type of life that you want. So I printed out two copies and I put one on my bathroom mirror and one right above my computer on the wall. And I did that so that way every single day I remember how I felt that night and how I didn't want to feel like that anymore. And I was so determined after that night to do whatever it took, however long it took, for me to have some sort of online business where I felt happy and I could do work that I was proud of. And so that was really the transformation for me, was that night and that letter I wrote to myself.
Wow. So I know from reading your story that your first big success was the release of your iPhone app, Photo 365 in 2011. Was that kind of your first time where you achieved what you wanted online? And how did you even do that?
Yeah, it was. It was my first big milestone, my big achievement. It was kind of interesting how it happened because, you know, the year before I released the app, I had the idea for the app already because I was using an app similar to that. But I noticed that it was just an okay app. It worked well, but it didn't look like a typical, well-polished iPhone app. So I really thought I could improve on the design of it. You know, I wasn't taking an original idea and coming up with it. I was taking something that was already out there, looking to be doing well with, you know, downloads and reviews, and just trying to improve on it. I thought at the time, you know, I was pretty naive. I thought I needed to know how to code. You know, I thought I needed to do this myself. But when I tried to go online or, you know, read books about how to code, I'm like, wow, this is really hard. You know, like this is going to take me way too long to learn well enough for me to make an app myself. And I just don't want to wait, you know, one or two or three or how many years in order to get that done. It was something I put aside until the following year, because after I hit my rock bottom, you know, I started listening to podcasts. I started going online and finding people who were making money online and really connecting with their story. And I found a guy, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about. His name's Pat Flynn over at Smart Passive Income. He had this podcast and I was listening to it. And he had this episode about making iPhone apps. And I thought, wow, it's pretty amazing that this guy who never built an iPhone app has all these different iPhone apps. And he did it by hiring other people to do it. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know like you could do that. You know, I didn't know you could hire other people to do things like that. So in January of 2011, I hired a company based out of the Ukraine. They told me it would be $1,900 to build this app. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. You know, I was very nervous about it because that was a lot of money at the time. And this company was in the Ukraine. I didn't know if they would run away with my money or what. But yeah, 8 months later, you know, kind of like a baby almost, my app was done. And I released it in the App Store. I didn't know what to expect. I really had low expectations at that point because, you know, I didn't want to get my hopes up. And I just thought, you know, if I don't even make a single dollar from this app, I'll be pretty happy because at that point, I actually took an idea and got it made, you know. And that was like a huge accomplishment at that point in my life because for many years, I hadn't done anything. So this was a huge step. But, you know, when I released it, I don't know what happened. I don't know why, because I did zero marketing for my app except share it to my Facebook friends. But Apple discovered my app. And next thing I know, they're featuring my app in the App Store. And then for 1 week, they featured it as App of the Week, which is like huge promotional banner on the front page of their App Store. You know, this is the app we love right now. So I had a huge spike in downloads naturally. And so in that first 30 days, because of Apple featuring me, I had made $30,000 from.
That's a pretty good ROI.
That's a great ROI. You know, $1,900 to get it made. And then I made $30,000 that very first month. That was the most money I've ever made online at that point. I felt like I won the lottery at that point. It was like Christmas morning every day when I woke up. I woke up really early, got on my computer, and I went to see how much money I made the day before. So that was really exciting. And that was my first sort of taste of successfully making money online. I had made many attempts before that, trying blogging, trying, you know, websites with Google AdSense and all these sort of get rich quick type businesses, but nothing ever stuck. Nothing was interesting to me. But this was my real first, I would call, success of making money online.
Wow. So just to dig in a little bit, in case anyone listening wants to create their own app or they have an idea for an app, but they don't code themselves, where did you find that company?
I found them at the time. It was called Elance.com, but I think they are now called Upwork. You can go to Upwork.com. You can post a job posting for almost anything that you want done, like writing or technical work, including like building an app. Just post your job ad, post your description, and you'll get companies and individuals bidding on your project. And, you know, you have to treat it like a real job interview, like you're hiring someone for your company. So, you know, you want to be very thorough. You want to, you know, look at their portfolio. You want to ask a lot of questions, you know, because you know, this is someone you're going to be trusting with your money and your idea or whatever work that you're giving them.
I actually just started using Upwork last month so I can outsource some blog posts for my new bachelorette party blog for an Etsy shop that I have. And I've been really impressed so far. I was able to find someone to write for me for like $16 a post, which is crazy.
That's amazing.
And you can see reviews, so you can definitely get a good sense before you hire someone. The only thing is the people that have the more reviews, they're probably more expensive.
Which is true. Yeah. So sometimes you can kind of try someone new, you know, and give them a shot, but yeah, it's a great place. I mean, I highly recommend it if you're looking for work. And also, if you're looking to make money, like you can try and get jobs on Upwork. If you're like a great writer, for example, you know, you can do that just to make some money up front.
Yeah, totally. So you don't even need your own idea necessarily. I mean, you saw an app that could be better and you decided to pitch it to make it better. And that's something that all of us can do, which is fantastic.
Correct. You know, I think one reason people struggle is they think they have to come up with an original idea, you know, like whether it's starting a business, doing an app, or even designing t-shirts, you know, they think they have to be original. But a lot of times, you know, when you're original and trying to do something no one's done before, you could be selling or making something to a market that they don't want that thing, you know, they're not interested in it. You know, there might be a reason why no one is making an app for a certain audience or selling a t-shirt for a certain audience, because maybe people have tried and they've all failed. So that's why. So, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can certainly take an idea and improve on it and still be successful. You think about like fast food hamburgers, right? McDonald's was out there. They were crushing it. They're huge. But now you think about all these other burger chains like Shake Shack, Five Guys, you know, all these more high-end burgers that are more expensive than McDonald's, but they're still doing very, very well because they've taken this idea, which is a burger, but they've put their own spin on it. You know, they have their own unique value proposition, and you know, they have customers that love their burgers better than, you know, McDonald's fast food. So, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can just sort of improve upon something and be successful with that.
So then what happened next?
When I did the app, I thought, well, you know, this is going to be it. You know, finally, I can quit my job. You know, it had been about 10 years at the time. I thought this is my golden ticket. But I knew when I had that early success, I could, okay, well, Benny, you know, calm down a little bit. You know, let's see how sales will be once Apple stops promoting you. Because I knew, like, you know, it was all because of Apple at that point, but I wanted to see where it would level off. And so, you know, months later, I noticed that sales for my app was, you know, of course, declined. And it wasn't to a point where I was comfortable. Like, my goal at that time was, like, I want to make enough money online so that I can quit my job and sort of seamlessly transition to my online business, right? So I wouldn't have to worry about paying the bills, especially, you know, my mortgage and my car payments. I didn't want that stress. So that was my goal. My salary at the time was $60,000 a year. So I was like, okay, I need to make around $60,000 with my online income. Then I'll feel comfortable enough to quit. So I'm like, okay, well, let me make another app. Well, it took me almost a year to come up with another idea, get it made, and put it out there. And when I put it out there, I thought, okay, this is going to be great. I'm excited. And it was like a bomb. It was a failure. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like I spent so much time and so much money, you know, getting this made. And it was just like, it was like a dud. It was really frustrating. And, you know, and even at the time, I had my blog, which was a Get Busy Living. And I was like promoting it to my audience, you know, this is a gratitude journal. So I thought, oh, they would love it. And, you know, I was like, you know, promoting it and hyping it. And it was like, you know, no one was really interested. And I was like, oh man, this is bad. So, okay, well, it's okay. Let me try and make another app. So I was like trying to come up with new ideas, you know. So I came up with like four or five apps. I can't really remember the exact number, but I do remember like my final app that I made was, again, I had high hopes for it. I spent thousands and thousands of dollars into this app. I thought it was going to be my lottery ticket. And then again, when I released it, I did marketing for it. I had a PR release. You know, I was trying to do as much as I could. It was a failure. I will never make money back on that app. So it was tough, you know, and I was still working at the restaurant, and every single year that I was still there, even every single day I was still there, I was like getting more and more depressed by it. And so it was a tough time, and it's sort of like just didn't know what to do. And so 2013, it was a new year. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do this year? Apps aren't working for me, you know, clearly. I realized I had to be honest with myself, like, you know, maybe you're not as good with apps as you thought. You know, maybe you got really lucky with your first app, which I did. I'll be honest. I got very lucky with the first one, but I tried and tried and tried, and it just wasn't working out. So, you know, I just had to pivot. I had to figure something out differently because I knew I couldn't keep trying apps. I just had a feeling like it was going to turn out really bad. I quit my job that year. Even though I wasn't financially ready, like I said, I wanted to make, you know, $60,000 a year, quit my job and be comfortable. But, you know, I just was tired of my job at that point. I was just so unhappy. It wasn't making my marriage any better at that point. You know, it was stressful. So I quit my job. Scary for sure, because I had no income at that point except for my apps that were making a little bit of money, but certainly not enough to pay the bills. I was like, well, what am I going to do? So I had to live off savings for like a few months. I had to sell, unfortunately, mutual funds, you know, in order to stay afloat during that stretch. And I decided that I was going to pivot to something that I was familiar with, but something different. So I went to make iPhone games. So I was still doing apps, but instead of making these apps that cost thousands of dollars and took months to make, I was going to build games that cost maybe less than $100. I could release a game in 24 hours. It was a very simple game, but it was just basically taking a game that someone was selling, and I could do anything I wanted with the game. So I would change the graphics of the game and make it feel like a different game. And then one game, I could make five different versions of it. The term is called reskinning. And there was a business model that I knew other people were having success with. So in 2013, I just went all in, which was scary. Like I said, I went, you know, my back was against the wall. I needed to make money as soon as possible. And so I went all in on making iPhone games. It was a slow start because I remember the very first day my iPhone 8 game came out. It was called Ladybug on the Run. It was like a little ladybug trying to dodge spiders, you know, on the screen. And I made like 25 cents my first day. So it was cool that I made money from, you know, the one game, but obviously it was not enough. You know, I just was focused. I was trying to stay positive because there's certainly a lot of downtime. You know, when you're starting a side hustle, when you're starting something new, it's really easy to lose patience because you want to see the results as fast as possible, right? Especially when you don't have money coming in and you're living off savings and you want it to happen fast. But a lot of times that's not the best way to approach it. You know, there was times I remember I just would stay up late when my wife was asleep and just trying to worried, like, what am I going to do if I don't succeed? What's going to happen? And, you know, I just tried to stay positive, tried to keep focusing on getting better, improving, making more games, seeing what works, you know. And then, you know, long story short, I started in July. Every month after that, my income from games started to get more and more and more. In December, at the end of December, I had made $10,000 from my iPhone games, which was, you know, a huge accomplishment for me, especially since I started with like making 25 cents in one day. It paid off. Luckily, I pivoted to iPhone games. I really enjoyed it.
You know, Jay, his story reminds me a lot of mine right now because I'm in that point where I quit my job. I was living off savings, wasn't making much money, and things weren't working, and you just had to go all in. I actually, Benny, just cashed out my taxable investment account on Monday. So it was something I didn't want to do, but, you know, I didn't have any more money, so I needed to bust into that, like, you know, break open my piggy bank. But now I'm pivoting. I've got a new venture planned, and I'm excited to see where it goes. But yeah, my back's against the wall. I got to earn money.
It's scary, but sometimes, like, that's the best move, I think, because, you know, when your back's against the wall, when you've got no other option except, you know, looking forward, I think you work harder, you know, you're more focused. You know, for me, like, at the time, like, you know, I had the option of going back to my old job. I could at any time go back to the restaurant, but I didn't want that as an option, because I don't want to keep like having that as my security blanket and my security net. So, you know, I was like, there's no way I'm going back to working at the restaurant. I don't care what, I'm not going back. And I think because I had that mentality, you know, I basically burned my ships. If you know the story, I was able to see success with iPhone apps.
Yep. I'm not going back. I'm doing whatever it takes.
Yeah, exactly. When you have that mindset, you definitely sort of hustle and work harder and you're more focused on making this work.
Totally. Yeah, I'm actually really excited. One of the things that I've been doing is just kind of like a stopgap measure. A local stained glass artist in the area needs a studio assistant. So I'm going to work at her shop for, you know, 8 to 12 hours a week and help clean up and do some grunt work. And I'm so excited. I've never been so excited to shop back before, but I'm stoked.
That'd be awesome. And, you know, I think you'll love it and be great for you. And even though you've had to cash out some of your investments, I think you'll look back and know it was the right decision.
Yeah. And I'll learn a ton of things from the artist. So I'm very excited.
One thing I think that might help us, Benny, in your experience, and some of our listeners have joined us in creating some businesses online, whether it's Etsy shops with digital downloads or print on demand. What you said earlier about how you are not necessarily coming up with brand new ideas. You're finding an idea and then finding a way to modify it. Would you recommend that approach versus coming up with something brand new? Like, for example, on Etsy, should we be looking for something that is already selling well and then modifying it slightly because we know there's a market for that? Like, what would you recommend in that space?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've sold a lot of t-shirts in the past few years. It's hard to come up with like an original idea every single time for a t-shirt. You're not going to be able to do that. It's great if you do come up with something unique, but a lot of times, you know, what does well for me and a lot of sellers is just taking something out there already and sort of like putting your own spin on it, you know, and like you're not copying, but you're just, you know, making a version of it that might appeal to a different group within that audience, right? It could be just like a font change. It could be, you know, like I've seen t-shirts with like a basic phrase on it, right? Just with like a single font, but maybe you make a version for females, right? So you pick a more like a, you know, cursive font or something, or you embellish it with some different elements. Now you have this same exact t-shirt phrase, but you sort of designed it for a more specific audience within that big audience, right? So, you know, this is a model I truly think that works, and I highly encourage it because, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time, and you can just find something that is doing well or okay. And if you feel like you can do it better or your own way, then by all means, go for it.
So my boyfriend had a t-shirt design website where you could buy the design to put on t-shirts. So you didn't even have to come up with the designs yourself. You just, you know, scrolled through. And he said that one of their most popular designs that sold a ton was their Zumba shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It was some design about Zumba.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing new to come up with about Zumba, but people really like their Zumba and they need new shirts because they get them all gross and sweaty and stuff.
That's right. And, you know, if you find like this passionate audience, we'll say take Zumba, for example, you can make shirts, you can make mugs, you can make keychains, you know, just imagine all the different kinds of things you can sell to people who are super passionate about Zumba or hiking or camping, you know, for example. You know, within that group of people who are passionate about their hobby, you can come up with so many different phrases and stuff for them and put it on a shirt or a mug or anything else.
So, Benny, I know recently you've been doing a lot of print-on-demand stuff and t-shirts. How did you go from games to t-shirts?
Well, with games, you know, I was enjoying it. I was seeing success with it. When 2014 started, I sort of found myself getting a little bit burnt out, you know, by the process. You know, I wasn't enjoying it as much as I was the previous year. And so I just didn't know what else I was going to do, you know, like what I was going to try. But I just remember one day coming across an interview, kind of like what we're doing right now in a Facebook group. And this guy was being interviewed and he was selling t-shirts online and making like six figures a month, apparently. And he was driving traffic to his t-shirts with Facebook ads. With t-shirts, he wasn't buying, you know, t-shirts in bulk. You know, he was using a company to print and ship his shirts for him. So he didn't have any risk. He didn't have to carry any inventory. And I thought, wow, this is a really cool business model, you know. And, you know, I love wearing t-shirts, you know. And before, when I read the 4-Hour Workweek, I thought about maybe selling t-shirts. But at the time, I thought maybe I needed to buy like a printing press and put it in my garage and then learn how to print shirts and pack and ship it, and like all these different steps. And I just, it was really overwhelming to me. I didn't know how to do it. So I put that aside until I came across this interview, and I thought, wow, this might be a really great way to sell t-shirts. I remember I bought the course that he was promoting in that interview, and I just sort of, you know, launched my first campaign on Teespring and, you know, started to learn how to use Facebook ads, which was completely new to me at that time. You know, that was a huge learning curve. And that's sort of how I got into t-shirts. And now, it wasn't an overnight success for me with t-shirts. Again, I had to really practice patience. It had to be resilient. I had to really persevere because, you know, I remember my first 21 campaigns, they all failed. Like, no one bought them. So that's like coming up with 21 different t-shirt designs, running Facebook campaigns for 21 different shirts and seeing them fail. That was a lot. And that was really frustrating because it's like, okay, well, another failure. But I enjoyed the process I discovered, and I kept trying for that first taste of victory, right? That first successful campaign. And it came with my 22nd shirt. Now, my 22nd shirt, I had profited after ad spend $30. Now, $30 is not a lot of money, but it was a huge win for me at that point. That really motivated me to sort of like find my next winner and come up with my next great shirt idea. So at that time, when I was really doing shirts, I decided that, you know, I can't do apps, I can't do shirts both at the same time. It would just be way too much. I made a decision, completely stop doing iPhone games, just completely stop, and really just focused all my free time on t-shirts, on, you know, designing, researching, uploading, learning Facebook ads, all that. I went all in on t-shirts, and it paid off for me because it started off real slow. My first 21 campaigns failed, but after 5 months of doing t-shirts, I had made a profit of $100,000 on selling my t-shirts online. And, you know, that was the most money I had ever made in a short period of time. It was great. I mean, it was amazing. It was, you know, the hard work paid off when I thought back by it, you know, the, you know, not giving up and things like that. So that's how I sort of got into t-shirts, and I, you know, have been doing t-shirts ever since then, along with some other things in e-commerce.
So I actually found your website because I was looking. I've bought a shirt off of Teespring before. It was a St. Louis Cardinals shirt. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at Teespring to host my campaign for Fiery Millennials t-shirts, which is my blog. And I was looking for hints and tips and tricks and stuff and came across your site. I was like, wow, okay, this guy is legit. So that's why we had to have you on and talk to you about selling t-shirts and stuff online, because I struggled mightily. I did a Facebook ad for my shirt and it got a lot of attention, but I think it only converted like 2 people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I struggled to make the minimum on Teespring. So in the future, if I want to do shirts, I think I want to do something where I can do print on demand, like Printful, instead of doing the Teespring thing with the minimum campaigns and stuff like that. So
wait, I think I'm confused here. What do you mean the minimum on Teespring?
Benny?
Well, before, when I started Teespring back in those days, you had to sell at least 10 shirts in order for Teespring to print and ship the shirts. So basically, that was the bare minimum, was 10 shirts. So, you know, in those first 21 campaigns, I was unsuccessful in selling at least 10 shirts for one campaign. The 22nd campaign, I sold 13 shirts. So finally, I was like, oh, right, finally, you know, these shirts will get printed and shipped to customers. But over time, you know, Teespring has dropped that minimum. So it went from like 10 to 3. Now it's like one shirt. So if you sell one shirt online, they will print and ship that shirt to your customers.
Okay. So technically you could kind of game the system a little bit, maybe have a friend do it.
Yeah. Back then, like if I had like 9 shirts sold, for example, I'm like my campaign, because you had set a time limit for your campaign, like 3 days, 7 days, whatever. If there was like 1 hour left and I only sold 9 shirts, I'm like, well, I don't want to waste, you know, this campaign and all the ad spend. So I would buy the 10th shirt so the campaign would tip and be successful and customers would, you know, get their stuff. And I would make a tiny profit, of course, because, you know, not as much as I would like because I had to buy the shirt. But now these days, again, you can sell one shirt to anyone. If someone orders it online, your campaign ends, they'll get the shirt from Teespring and you'll get the money that you've made from it.
So you made $100,000 in 5 months. I'm sure you and your wife were super happy. How are you guys affording to live before you made that money?
before that was we were living off savings when I quit my job. And so I had to sell like a mutual fund, I remember, which was very painful to do. I had a LeBron James rookie card at the time. I don't even know how much that's worth now, but.
Oh, yeah. Especially with him going to the Lakers.
Yes, exactly. And him doing so well, you know, like I'm afraid to look. I'm sure it's gone up in value, but, you know, I figured, you know, this was going to get me quite a bit of money. So I sold that. So then once the iPhone game started to do well, that was supporting us. And then even when I started doing t-shirts, right, and I stopped doing games, what was really nice about the games was it was still making me money. So technically it was like passive income because, you know, people were still downloading the games. I was making money through the ads that were appearing in the game. So I was making thousands a month with my games, even though I wasn't doing anything with them. So that really helped me be able to run Facebook ads and learn how to use Facebook ads. Because the only way to learn how to use Facebook ads is to actually run Facebook ads. And so that means you have to spend money. So it was the apps that were supporting us. And then once, you know, Teespring started to do well, Teespring was a huge boost in our income. And, you know, we were living off that for a while.
That's a great point. Sometimes you need to fund what you want to do with something else in order to invest fully in what you actually want to do. I know for us with Facebook ads, we've been nervous to try it out because, you know, we're not making money in the podcast. So why should we put Facebook ads into it? But given that I have other revenue sources through my blog and other places, I've been a little bit more bold to try it, I guess.
Yeah, I remember when I started doing Facebook ads, I remember, okay, well, my budget today is 10. I'm okay with spending 10 because I know I'll make at least $10 for my apps. You know, and then I would be, it would go up if I was doing well, like, okay, 25, I can spend 25 on my ads, which is okay because I know my apps will make, you know, at least 25. So like my apps were sort of covering, you know, my ad spend at the very early stages.
So can you explain, I think a lot of people are probably thinking Facebook ads and selling t-shirts, how does this even go together? You're saying people are shopping or they're on Facebook, that's a prime time to sell them a t-shirt. How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if anyone who's on Facebook will notice these ads that you see in your newsfeed, right? You see these ads based on what you like on Facebook, you know, the different interests. You know, basically with Facebook, as we all know, they have a lot of data on us. You know, they know exactly our shopping behaviors. They know what we like, what we click on, what we talk about. And so for advertisers, this is really great because we can really drill down and really find this narrow targeted audience that we want to sell to. So, for example, the first shirt that I was successful with, it was targeting not nurses, but a more specific group within nurses, and it was pediatric nurses. So nurses is a huge group, but when you really drill down and find like your niche, you can do a better job of marketing and selling to them. With Facebook, I can go, and when I set up an ad, I can target all the people who list pediatric nurse as their job title. You know, that's pretty cool. So that my shirt will be shown only to those people, I mean, not just like nurses in general. With Facebook ads, you can really dig deep and get narrow with who you want to target. You know, I would come up with shirts. I remember like one of my early shirts was like to lawyers. My second successful shirt was actually to butchers, people who cut meat at grocery stores. That was a shirt I discovered, I came up with based on research. And again, I typed in butcher as the job title. And so my ad would only show to people who listed butcher and their job titles. You can do this with job titles. You can do this with hobbies, interests, magazines that people like. If people like a magazine about yoga, a specific magazine, you can target only those people who like that specific magazine. That's how you sort of target your audience on Facebook. You can sell them t-shirts and all kinds of products that you can buy online these days.
Man, that's genius. Yeah, because I was wondering with some of my shirts, do I have to write the title in a certain way for keywords? And that's something you can definitely do, but you might as well go straight to the source and find the people who would be looking or would be interested in a shirt like that through Facebook. That's awesome. Do you have any recommendations for like location specific targeting? Did you try to get a certain, I know like Facebook, for example, you can select like Chicago and this thing and all this stuff, and you can get like maybe really narrow, like this audience is 10,000 people, or you could do like 3 million people. Do you have any advice on targeting in other areas?
Yeah, with targeting, you don't want to go too broad. You know, you don't want to target like all of the United States, because if you're trying to sell your shirt to everyone, no one's going to buy it. It's way too broad. You have to really get narrow. You know, for example, like you don't want to just target a shirt for dog lovers. That's a pretty big audience, and it's going to be millions and millions of people. But, you know, start thinking about, okay, what are the different dog breeds you can sell to, like bulldogs, pit bulls, golden retrievers? Now you're really niching down, right? Now you're going to be able to target those people better and really get your ads in front of the right people, right? Because if you target people who love dogs, well, there's all these different kinds of dogs, right? It's way too broad. But if you target your ad only to people who love golden retrievers, then you're able to show your ads to the right people. So I think that's one of the biggest mistakes when people do ads is they go so broad at the beginning, but you really need to start very narrow. As for location, you know, generally I do like the whole United States, you know, that's just how it is, you know, and you only want to go to like specific states or location only if your shirt is relevant for that particular state or city. So, you know, there's a lot of shirts before I saw like people are proud of being from Minnesota or people are proud of living in Washington, right? Well, you want to show those shirts only to people who, you know, live in those states. So yes, that's when location specific targeting would be beneficial. Otherwise, if you're targeting a shirt for golden retriever lovers, you want to target the whole United States in general.
That's a good point. Gwen, I'm thinking about you and your state specific coffee mugs that you're making.
Yeah, maybe that would be a good idea. So Benny, I'm doing print-on-demand mugs. So on Etsy, I've been trying to sell my stained glass patterns. Mm-hmm. And apparently there just aren't very many stained glass artists who are browsing Etsy looking for patterns to buy. So people always told me, they're like, wow, your patterns are so beautiful though. So then I was like, well, maybe I'll just put the patterns on a mug and sell the mug that way. I have several states that I've finished, although my plan was to do all 50. Where I take all of the major roads, like the interstates, and I make those the joins between the different colors. And then I put that on a mug. And so far, nobody's been buying them. But maybe if I do a targeted ad for Washington State for my Washington mug or my New York mug or whatever, you know, maybe some people would be inspired to buy them.
I think, yeah, absolutely. It's worth a try. You know, I remember like there's certain states that are more passionate than others, like Texas, for example, California, I remember. Colorado, you know, those are states I remember seeing a lot of t-shirts for. So yeah, I would definitely try to target state specific and start, you know, with those bigger states like those and see how your idea works. But it seems like a really cool idea to put on a mug for sure.
Good point. As someone who's lived in Colorado, there's a lot of state pride there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I even saw people getting tattoos of Colorado, which is cool. Okay, good advice. So how do you actually do this in practice? I definitely sell, and I understand how you do that part, but I don't get how you hook it into Facebook. Like, how do you get the Facebook ad to click to it? Do you just paste to the URL of your listing?
Yeah, exactly. When you create your ad, there's a place normally where you can put your link. That's a link. Whenever someone clicks on your ad, sometimes there's like a Shop Now button. So if they click on the Shop Now button, it'll take them to whatever URL you want. So that's where you put your specific URL for your Etsy, you know, mug or your Teespring t-shirt or whatever it may be. Because there's different types of ads that you can run, but there's some ads that where there's no Shop Now button. So in that case, where you put your link is you put your link in the description. So you would say like, do you love Colorado? Maybe you'll love this mug. Order here. And then you'll put your little link right after the order here text. And they'll click on the link if they're interested and take them to your sales page.
I know that you have a YouTube channel and you have a podcast and a blog. Do you have any videos or blog posts just describing that process? I think hearing it, people are probably interested, but they need some extra help.
I don't, unfortunately, but I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of information on YouTube. If you search on YouTube, you know, print on demand with t-shirts and especially Facebook ads is huge. So if you go on YouTube, you can definitely find a lot of tutorials on how to get started.
Gwen, I think maybe we should make a YouTube video for the Fire Drill channel and we'll do this as part of our mastermind. I'll run the ad. I'll put the spend out there. I know you're like, okay. I'm not spending. Were you thinking in your head you're not going to spend the money on it?
No, that would be something we're spending money on.
Yeah, I think we should totally do it. Yeah, I think we should do the Facebook ads. I will be the one to do that then. Cool. I'm excited to try it out. Are there any limitations? Like, oh, you had mentioned you did this with Teespring, but do you think like Etsy, you can do that with anything? Amazon?
With Etsy and Amazon, it's probably harder because, you know, there's one main reason is because you're not able to track how your ad is doing because when you have a shirt on Teespring or Shopify, you can put like a, it's called a pixel, right? It's a Facebook pixel that you put on your checkout page. So basically when you run an ad and someone clicks on your ad, it takes them to your Teespring page or whatever, and they make a purchase. That pixel is going to fire and go back to that ad and say, okay, this person made this purchase from this ad. So if you have five ads running, you're going to know which ad, which group brought in the sale. So that's how you know which ad is working and which is not. So if it's not working, you're going to turn it off. If it's working well, you might want to increase the budget. Now, with Etsy and Amazon, you can't put a Facebook pixel on their page. So they don't allow that. So yes, you can run traffic to those places, but you're not going to be able to know how well they're doing or if they're bringing in sales at all. So that's one of the drawbacks of running Facebook ads to those two platforms.
So, okay, this is crazy, but when I click marketing in my Etsy shop, I'm actually part of the Facebook ads beta. Maybe not everyone is part of that. I don't know, Gwen, if you got that offer.
I don't know.
It looks like they are now offering the pixel, like you were saying. So the pixel, if anyone is not familiar with that, it's, as Benny said, it's an awesome tool. We use pixels actually for the mastermind. So we wanted to fill the spot with 8 people and we advertised on Facebook to people who had already been on that page of Fire Drill Podcast that discussed the mastermind, because we figured if they were reviewing that page, then they were probably interested in the mastermind. And we want to let them know that it's now, the second one is now open and they can sign up. And we did that on Facebook, and Pixel is kind of what enabled that. It's a really powerful tool, and probably anyone in a small business needs to figure that out.
Yeah, it's very powerful because that's called retargeting or remarketing. So, you know, when someone goes to your website, they may not be ready to buy at the time, like if or sign up for your mastermind or buy my t-shirt. You know, they may be on the subway, they may be on the bus, they may be busy. So they don't have time to buy, but maybe later on in the day or the next day, they're on Facebook again. You retarget them because you're showing your ad to people who've already visited your site. They'll be like, oh yeah, this t-shirt I saw yesterday, I've been meaning to buy it, so let me buy it now. So, you know, retargeting ads are huge and one of the biggest ways to really get a great ROI from your advertising on Facebook.
Awesome. So let's speed up to present day. So you talked about Teespring, but I know now that you're doing more of Amazon. Take us through the journey, like really quick, stats. You made $100,000 in 5 months. Like what happened next? What led you to expand to other companies?
Well, for me, it was like, you know, with t-shirts, you know, it started to get really competitive and crowded because everyone was like discovering this way of selling t-shirts online. You just had to sort of find different products to sell. And luckily at the time, there were other companies who were opening and entering the market who were not only offering t-shirts, but offering mugs and necklaces and other print-on-demand products. So I started to sell other products to these audiences that we're selling to over and over again, you know, just instead of a t-shirt. Because, you know, people may only need a couple t-shirts, but they may love a mug or may love, you know, something else. So it was like trying to find different products to sell to these people. And then after that, I was really focused on building a brand because, you know, with the print-on-demand model, we're basically selling on rented space. We're at the mercy of Teespring because, you know, it's Teespring where people are actually buying the stuff from. So they think they're ordering it from Teespring. But I want to build a website where people know, hey, I bought it from iLoveT-shirts.com. They're a great company. I love the customer service. I had a great experience. You know, let me buy from them again. So that's what I wanted to do because I noticed that a lot of sellers, they were moving away from print-on-demand and more to Shopify and building a brand. So that's where I was sort of gravitating towards. And then I was thinking more about doing like physical products. So now what I do, I don't sell as much t-shirts as I did before. I buy products from China, like a lot of people are doing these days, buying it in wholesale. I'm shipping and packing it myself. It's my wife and I. So that's our business pretty much these days is Shopify and physical products. We sell mainly like necklaces to a very specific audience. Again, it's not necklaces for everyone. You know, it's not that broad. It's more specific for a certain audience. And then, you know, I do t-shirts on the side as well. I'm not selling on Teespring anymore. I have t-shirts there, but I'm selling them on Amazon because Amazon, they probably noticed that, hey, this print-on-demand thing is growing. And so we want to start doing it. And so they opened up their own print-on-demand service. So now basically you can upload your design and have it on Amazon. And if a customer finds your shirt, they like it and orders it, Amazon will print, ship your shirt. And what's great is they handle all the customer service. So, you know, you don't have to deal with returns. You don't have to deal with problems with the shirts. Amazon handles all that. So it's a really, I think one of the coolest ways to sell t-shirts these days is because you're able to get your shirt on Amazon when in front of millions of people, you know, who are on Amazon every single day looking for something. So again, with Amazon, when I'm selling shirts on there, it's trying to come up with shirts for an audience that can't find a shirt anywhere else. Like, so if I'm selling a shirt for a golden retriever lover, right? For example, it's hard to find that type of shirt when you go to the mall, right? Or when you go to a store, you can't find a shirt that specific. But when you go online, when you go on Amazon, then you can find these shirts for these really passionate people. Basically, what I do these days is I sell shirts on Amazon and I also have a Shopify store.
So when you're saying you're not focusing as much, I mean, can you give us a sense of your income breakdown, if you don't mind? Like, how much are you making from each source?
Sure. Like Amazon these days, I'm not spending as much time on it just in 2018. So I'm not uploading as much, but it still brings in about $100 every single day, which is amazingly good passive income.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, last month, for example, like right now it's July 2nd. Last month in June, I made $3,500 from my shirts on Amazon. So I didn't do anything. I spent zero time, but I put in a lot of work last year. I spent 3 or 4 hours every single day researching, designing, uploading. So I put in a lot of work last year, but this year I wanted to sort of take a step back from Amazon, focus more time more on other projects. And so still bringing me in great money. I would say the majority of the money I do these days is from Shopify. And so I've been focusing on that, really trying to grow it more, trying to work on my advertising, you know, reaching more audience, trying to get my site found in Google a little bit more. But yeah, those are the two areas. I would say it's probably like 80% Shopify right now, 20% Amazon, if you want a sort of a breakdown.
So you're not running Facebook ads anymore, or you are?
I am. I'm still running Facebook ads for my Shopify store. So I run Facebook ads and also run now Google ads. So I've sort of like diversified, because these days with Facebook ads is a lot more expensive these days because there's so many more people advertising on Facebook compared to 3 or 4 years ago. So a lot of people who are selling online, they are looking for other traffic sources. You know, they're on Instagram, they're on, some are doing Snapchat ads, some are doing Twitter ads. A lot of people are on Pinterest, you know, so you have to really diversify where you're reaching your target audience these days. You can't just really solely rely on one traffic source like people were 3 or 4 years ago.
One more thing I want to mention about the Facebook ads and a question for you. So we have a good friend, Bobby, and he actually just launched a podcast called Laptop Empires. Bobby from Millennial Money Man. If anyone wants to check that out, it's awesome. It just launched and I just listened to the first 4 episodes today. But anyways, Bobby, he has a course called the Facebook Ads Side Hustle, which I took earlier this year. And the course is about how to do Facebook marketing and offer it as a service to and get clients. And I think like how to scale up to a few $1,000 a month. But the way they teach you to run Facebook ads in the course is kind of to run to a funnel. Like you get an account with ClickFunnels and then you pay for the Facebook ad and then you collect email addresses as leads through Facebook. It's all about like building this email database that people can then market to. Is that something that makes sense for this type of stuff? Or do you think like going directly to Etsy or wherever, Shopify, Teespring, wherever they can buy the t-shirt is better than getting them on your email list and then trying to sell them a t-shirt?
No, I think that would be a great model as well, because I, you know, for me as well, like when people shop my Facebook ad, they come to my store, you know, a lot of them don't buy the first time. I definitely want to find ways to, you know, remarket them. And so one way is to collect emails for visitors to my website. So I have a sign up form where it says like get 10% off your first purchase. All you have to do is enter your email address. So, you know, they enter their email address and, you know, there's a lot, majority of the customers, they don't buy that day after they enter the email address. But what happens is those emails get put into a funnel, right? So this is a group where these people have signed up, but they haven't bought yet. And then I have an automated email system set up where it shows them like an email every single day for the next 7 days. Because again, a lot of people don't buy right away. And sometimes it takes them like 3 or 4 different touch points for them to feel comfortable buying from you. They feel like you're trustworthy. And so, yeah, so this email system that I have set up is converts really well because I'm able to send them emails and show them different products and maybe show them customer testimonials, like, you know, of what previous customers said to build trust and for them to be comfortable enough to order from my store. So yeah, I think the ClickFunnel ways definitely can work. Or if you send them directly to a product page, that can definitely work as well too.
One thing I'm trying to do with the Etsy shop, and I don't know if this works yet, so no one copy me until I have a result for you guys. But on Pinterest, I am putting a pin that will offer someone a free download if they enter their email address. So I created a landing page on ConvertKit that says enter your email address here and get the free bachelorette party printable game. And then my plan is that they see the pin on Pinterest, they enter their email address, they get the game for free, and then I can try to sell them later like a t-shirt because I know this person is in market for bachelorette party stuff and I can sell them more expensive things. That's my kind of funnel I'm trying to create with Pinterest, but I have no idea if it's successful yet. And I haven't paid for the pin to get a lot of impressions quite yet. I'm just seeing what happens organically.
It's a great idea. You know, there's a lot of people who do sort of this model on Shopify where it's like a free plus ship model. So basically the item is free and then you just pay for shipping. So they're going to lose like a little bit of money in the front end, or they're going to break even in the front end, right? And they don't care because basically they want to get people into the funnel. They want to get these emails. And what they do later is they upsell these people, you know, hey, you like this keychain, you know, it's just pay shipping. And then after they buy, they'll be like, hey, maybe you want to buy this hoodie. Maybe you want to buy this t-shirt. So they'll show them a more expensive item as an upsell after making that initial purchase. So yeah, it definitely is a model that can work.
I will definitely link to Bobby's Facebook ad side hustle course in the show notes because it's awesome. And there aren't many things that get me to wake up early every single morning. And that course, I woke up early so I could have time to do that before work for 3 weeks. So it's the real deal. It's really good. And Gwen and I both know him personally. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. We had him on the podcast. And my boyfriend is currently working with somebody who took the course for his kombucha site. And it's starting out well. So definitely works, the course.
Oh, he hired someone that was trained by Bobby.
Uh-huh.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
Yeah,
glad to hear that.
It's working out well.
All right. Well, Benny, I think it's about that time that we go into the final two with you. Gwen, do you want to kick it off?
I would love to. All right. So, Benny, if anybody has any sort of question on the stuff that we've covered today, how can they get a hold of you?
The best way is to go to my blog and contact me through there, getbusylivingblog.com. And I have a contact form there and you can just reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you know you have. Just let me know you came from the podcast, and I'll be more than happy to, you know, help you out in any way.
Awesome. Wonderful. Okay, Jay, you want to do the final question?
Yes. Benny, what is your wildest dream?
My wildest dream? Oh, wow. That's
first thing that pops in your head. Go.
I would love to be in a movie, you know, like be on the big screen. Like even if I'm like in the background or like I'm the customer at the restaurant or something, you know, I think that would be a cool experience.
Any sort of genre in particular?
No genre, just like a big blockbuster movie, you know, you would see in the movie theater. So any genre would be fine. I'd rather not be in a horror movie because I just don't like horror movies. So I will say no horror movies.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Benny, for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you both for having me on. I had a good time. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.